down, but they won't let me. A fugitive must be a rolling stone. Down every road there's always one more city. I'm on the run, the highway is my home.
I always wonder which came first, the television program or that song. They actually tie together very well. Talking Fugitive with Kitty and Bobby and Ken on for another 30 minutes of in-depth discussion, as is featured regularly on the Fugitive Views and Reviews. Am I going to get a round of applause? I got it correct that time, didn't I?
Yeah, we just expected to be done right.
All right. Anyway, but enough of me. If you want to be on the program tonight, it's 800-407-KSAV. Or the email during the show is talk@ksav.org. And talk is what we do here. So when it comes to talk, here's a man with no equal, Bobby Neer.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Dave. Episode number 30 of season one of The Fugitive, The End Game. It's the final episode of the season. And what strikes me about this particular episode, there's a lot of unusual things in this episode, but the two that I noticed right away, I just watched it again a couple hours ago, come really very, very early in this particular episode. One is that, well, let's put it this way. In every Fugitive episode, writers have one thing they have to do. They have to get Kimball in trouble. In some way, he's got to get in trouble. That sets up the entire story. Either somebody recognizes him, or there's a crime committed, and he gets involved with it. Something happens within the first 10, 15 minutes, sometimes sooner, of a particular episode to set up the whole story. He's got to get in trouble over and over and over again. After you've seen the series for a season, half a season, whatever, this becomes pretty routine. You know what's going to happen. There's only certain things you can do to get him in trouble. You've seen it over and over and over again. But in this particular episode, he gets in trouble in the beginning in a most unusual way. This is very interesting. I like the way this is written. Kimball is simply walking down the street in some town. I'm not sure exactly where it is. He's going to work. And nothing is happening. He's in a big crowd, a lot of people on the street. Nobody recognizes him. There's no trouble anywhere. Everything seems to be fine. However, there's a photographer out on the street who's taking pictures of people trying to make a little money. And he happens upon a young couple. Looks like they've just been married recently. He stops them. He takes their picture just as Richard Kimball is walking by. And Kimball hears the click of the camera, and he looks behind him at the exact moment, at the worst possible moment, so that he ends up in the picture. This is a very unusual way to get him in trouble. And you wonder, well, what's so bad about that? Well, what's bad about it is that through a lot of circumstance, the young couple gets the picture. But when they get it, Kimball's in it, and he's looking around at the picture. They see it. They don't like it. They throw it in the trash can in the hotel that they're staying in. Only it doesn't stay in the trash can. It falls out of the trash can. The maid finds it. Then the manager of the hotel finds it. It ends up at the front desk, and a cop finds it. And after he finds it, eventually it goes back to Gerard. That's a very unusual way for Kimball to get in trouble. I really admire that, because it's imaginative, the kind of thing you don't see. Most of the ways we can just predict, but you couldn't really predict this one. And it also shows, I think, how easily Kimball can get in trouble, how the most mundane-looking thing can really cause a disaster. The other thing that's interesting about this episode and unusual is that this is Gerard at his best. He's never better than he is in this episode. He is a super cop in this episode. He gets in there right away. He blows up this picture to humongous proportions, and he stands there and he looks at it, and he figures out just by looking at it what time of the day Kimball was walking down the street based on the shadows in the picture, what neighborhood he must have been in, whether he's really going to work, is it morning, is it afternoon, whatever it is, and he's right about all of that. And he decides that Kimball's going to go the same way the next day to work. We'll simply set a trap and catch him. Only Kimball's too smart for that. As a fugitive, he knows he can't afford to do the same thing every day. So he takes a different route, and he manages to get away. But this episode is all about the chase. This is getting back to the basics of the series. Great chase sequences in this episode. Great individual scenes, and of course my favorite scene of all that I talked about on an earlier program we did on Women of the Fugitive, when Kimball has a little street scene with a prostitute. But there's a lot in here to really like. Ken, I know this is one of your favorites. Did you notice those differences at the very beginning?
Yes, I gave this episode a 10 when we reviewed it on our board. And I've seen this episode, I'd say, about 5 times. And it's one of those ones where you can just watch it, you know, again and again, you know, versus other episodes, you just watch it once and that's it. But this one is very, very different than what we've seen. Actually, I would say out of the 120 episodes of the whole 4 years, this one kind of stands out as being different. Because, like you said, there's a cast of characters, but Kimbo's not saving the life of anybody. He's not being taken hostage. What Kimbo is doing in this episode is he's MacGyver. He has to improvise, right?
Yeah.
All right, he walks down the street, and then we learn that, hey, Kimbo's using some common sense, and he says, hey, I better take a different route on, you know, different days. And once he finds out that, you know, his picture's in the paper, then he improvises. He says, how am I going to get out of here? He finds out there's a police dragnet. You know, he contacts that guy with the radio and, you know, makes a deal with him. I kind of like that Kimbo here was using his smarts to get away from Gerard. And, boy, if you have Gerard breathing down your neck and, you know, there's a dragnet around the town, what's Kimbo going to do? And eventually, you know, you get that scene where he's trying to get out of town, and then he sees that roadblock, and he jumps out in the nick of time and goes into the housing development. But just the way Kimbo acted was, you know, it's pretty smart. I kind of put myself in Kimbo's shoes, and I say, what would I do? You know, the cops know I'm in town. How am I going to get out? What do you think, Kitty?
Well, you know, I can't disagree with anything that you guys have said, but, you know, the other element of this episode, that what makes it unique, is that they've kind of taken, while on the one hand it's serious, on the other hand they've also made it kind of humorous, too. I mean, you know, I agree about with Gerard, you know, how he's able to pinpoint where Kimball was and about what time of day it was. And all of that, and you know, he certainly is the no nonsense cop in this episode. The way he talks to people, he has a very interesting run in with that anonymous prostitute. It's an interesting conversation. And I know both Bob and I have said that it's a shame we couldn't have seen more of her, because she was kind of an interesting little character there. But it also seems like this episode is one where they were trying to be a little humorous, because Kimball actually does eventually find himself in a hostage situation. He hides in a house and he's found by this old guy, and it turns out you've got these two old guys living together. One thinks he's guilty, the other one doesn't think he's guilty. And you've got Kimball, who kind of ends up being a referee between these two guys.
Yeah.
And basically they tell Kimball that they were business partners, and thanks to the one guy, their business went bankrupt, and so they're just living together. I was still trying to figure out why they were still living together if the one caused the other one to go bankrupt. I was wondering if in the 60s here they were trying to make a subtle attempt to say these guys were more than just business partners. and then the other thing about it too was you had basically this three-ring circus develops in this episode where everybody starts, I think, didn't we have somebody selling hot dogs at some point?
Yeah.
You know, everybody and their brother is coming up to this neighborhood because they want to see Gerard catch Kimball. And then Gerard, I always thought Gerard should have had this mustache that twirled at the end, because the way he was saying, "I've got you now, Kimball," to me it reminded me of Snidely Whiplash. You know, I was just expecting the ha 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 type of laugh at the end of it. And so it was it was definitely a different episode. They never took this kind of direction in an episode again, and you know, while it was somewhat entertaining, I'm kind of glad they never did try to be humorous again.
Oh, yeah. You know, actually, Kitty, I agree. The Fugitive, when they try to do a comedy, I think they tried it once before, too, in Fun and Games and Party Favors or whatever.
Oh, I don't think they were trying to be funny in that one. I think that one just ended up being funny.
But you know what? Comedy does not work in The Fugitive. And, you know, the scene with the two old fogies, you know, and they're arguing back and forth, and you get a little humor, and Kimbo's just sitting there, you know, saying, hey, what's up with these two clowns, you know? To me, that scene didn't mean much to me at all. You know, I wasn't even laughing, you know, at some of the snide jokes or whatever. And so The Fugitive is a drama series. It's not comedy at all. When they've tried to do it, it just does not work.
Well, let's go back to the beginning of the episode and mention a few individual important scenes. And to go back for a minute to what I mentioned at the beginning here, this is a very different Gerard. Throughout the series here, the writers have a real problem here. Kimball's always got to get away, or there is no series, obviously. So every episode is basically the same. He gets in trouble, it's an impossible situation, but somehow he manages to get out of it. Why does he get out of it? Well, he's never really portrayed in the series as being all that smart. He may look like MacGyver every now and then, but he's no MacGyver. In fact, he makes a few mistakes of his own, and he gets lucky. Mainly depends on other people. So in order to have Kimball get away week after week after week after week, you can't have Gerard be too smart. I think they really kind of box themselves into a corner with this. So you have Gerard, he's determined, but is he a great investigator? I've had people say to me that he's a genius, and I say, show me. I don't think he's a genius, but in this particular episode, he's not just determined, it goes beyond that. He's very methodical. He goes from step to step. And remember, he goes up, he's got a map on the wall that he's able to write on, and he puts a box in it. He puts a box and he says, Kimball could be here or here, here, and he draws four different points, and he says he's got to be right in this area right here. That's different than what he normally does, because normally when he's sighted somewhere, he'll simply go to that town and simply hope that he runs into him. There's nothing scientific about it at all. He simply hopes that he gets lucky. Here, he's actually... I mean, this is so different than the Gerard we normally see. It's not even close. I was really impressed. But you know what? If you do that in too many episodes, Kimball's going to get caught. I mean, you can't. If I'm a writer here, I got to say Gerard can't be this smart, because there's no way in the world he's going to keep on missing him. And then later on, when after Kimball meets the prostitute in the street, and she decides to turn him in, and she has this great scene with Gerard. She says to him, I don't know if you remember or not, she says to him, if you're so smart, how come you haven't caught him yet? And that's when he launches into a thing. He says, the reason I haven't caught him is because of people like you. People like you keep helping him, and that's why.
So blame the victim.
Well, yeah,
blame
he's not going to take responsibility for him getting away over and over again. He simply says, listen, I'm doing everything I can do, but what am I supposed to do? Everybody he meets, every woman falls in love with him. Everybody feels sorry for him. They give him rides out of town. They give him money.
All right. We're going to take a ride out of town here real quickly, just for 1 minute, give you a chance to regroup. Those of you in the audience, stick around. We'll be back to talk some more about The Fugitive right here on Retro Radio.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dave White. And with me today are Dr. Phil.
Hello.
Homer Simpson.
Woo-hoo!
And Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Good morning.
These guys are here to help me tell you about my program, Talkin' Television with Dave White on KSAV.
I have a feeling some bad stuff is about to go down.
Every Tuesday from 7:30 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time, we have a fun discussion of television past and present.
Is that the truth or a lie?
What do you guys think of my program?
A load of crap.
Boring.
Outrageous.
And what about my co-host, television guru Tim Carmody?
The drum pimp.
Jerk ass!
But don't take their word for it. Tune in and join in every Tuesday, 7:30 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time on KSAV.
Stay with KSAV.
All right, Making Escaping the Law Look Easy, the story of Richard Kimball. Back to talk some more fugitive. Bob, you pick up where you left off.
Okay. 2 weeks from tonight, we'll be back for every classic episode like The Endgame. There are bad episodes, too, and you just have to face them sometimes. They just don't go away. And 2 weeks from tonight, we'll pick our worst episodes of Season 1. I can't imagine what those will be, but I would tune in, find out what they are 2 weeks from tonight. Other great scenes in The Endgame, a lot of good chase scenes, especially early on. A great roadblock scene. Kimball's always subject to running into a roadblock. And he runs into a roadblock, and Gerard is down there with a lieutenant from the local police department, very, very nicely played by Joe Campanella. And he's hiding in a truck, and he gets out to run away. And what do you know? Kimball's got no luck. There's a good Samaritan in the line of cars. He gets out of the car and starts hollering, "There he is! That's the guy! There he is! I recognize him." He even jumps out of his car and runs down to Gerard. I mean, how much bad luck can you possibly have? So that's another great scene. So all of the really good scenes come in the first half of this story. Then Kimball ends up, as has already been stated, the only place he can go, he breaks into a house, and he ends up with two very strange men called Reed and Devlin. I have mixed feelings about these scenes. Like Ken said, they tend to drag the story down a little bit because I think they're spending too much time with them. They spend almost the whole second half of the story with those two, when I think they might have been better served just being having maybe as much screen time as the prostitute had, and as the kid with the radio out in the street had. I think that it is hurt a little bit by them. Now, Kitty's already mentioned the humorous aspects of this. I don't really know whether they were trying to be humorous or not. In my review, when I wrote it on the message board and in our first book, I actually took like a half a point or a point off for this misguided attempt at humor. I don't know that it really works. You've got two great character actors, John Fiedler and John McGuire, and they're very good at what they do, playing parts they played for years and years as character actors. They're the odd couple before the odd couple was even written. I don't think there's any gay story here that Kitty had mentioned in her review, not back in the mid-60s. I think they're just these two guys ran a business together, ran it into the ground, lost all their money, and then decided to live together for financial reasons. They didn't have any choice. Is it humorous sometimes? No. But you know what happens in that? I don't know whether you remember this or not, Kitty and Ken, but there's something really remarkable happens for a fleeting moment. There's actually some consistency in this series. Kimball is talking to them, and he says to them, "I guess you're just not going to believe me, my story about the one-armed man, the man who really killed my wife. As a matter of fact, I just saw him a couple of months ago in Chicago."
Yes, I do.
And in reality,
that
he actually did Search in a Windy City, which we're going to do in April. What do you think of that, Kitty?
Yeah, I thought that was very well done. In fact, you know, that may be the only consistency we've seen so far. I mean, we saw him. He mentioned that in Chicago, and
yeah,
apparently that Search in a Windy City, maybe that's the one episode that all the writers watched, because...
Well, the director is the same, Jerry Hopper. He directed both. That
okay,
may be why.
Yeah, because he mentions this, and then, you know, Gerard mentions, I think, doesn't Gerard mention Chicago to him when he has him in jail? And then they also mention Chicago in The Survivors. You know, so we do have a mention of that city in at least a couple of other episodes. So it is kind of nice that they did try to make an attempt at a little bit of consistency there.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah. I was thinking when you guys mentioned that Search in a Windy City should have been episode 30.
Oh, I agree.
And that would have been a classic way to end season one.
Oh, yeah.
Kimbo sees the one-armed man, you know, and then you kind of.
Well, we're gonna do that on two
right.
shows in April, and I said that in my review, and the reason I said that, we'll get more indefinite when we do the show, is the way that particular episode ends with Kimbo walking down the street, his back is to the camera, it's raining, it's foggy, it's horrible, and he just walks away, and you get this feeling of hopelessness that he's out in the street again, and where's he going to go? I think you want to end the season with that kind of thing,
right.
Leaving the viewers to wonder, my goodness, now I have to get through the summer. What's going to happen to this guy before the new season begins? I think that's an important thing to do. Regarding this particular episode, the big disappointment for me actually was the ending. The ending did not appeal to me, where they get Kimball away out of the house by taking him in this clunky old car, racing down the highway, and then the car runs off.
And it's actually just the one guy. It's the guy who thinks that Kimball is innocent.
It's Reed. Reed is the one who thinks he's innocent. In the meantime, Devlin goes to Gerard and says he's staying at our house. He turns him in. Well, it's called the end game, so, you know, you have Gerard standing there. You see the car run off the cliff. Gerard looks down and he goes, so, this is how it ends, huh? The end game. And then what happens? I mean, if Reed really believes that Kimball is innocent and he really wants to help him get away, somebody tell me why he gives it all away at the end of the story.
Well, yeah, and then he, in essence, also gives himself in, you know, because he ends up getting arrested at the end. And, you know, and I guess part of the reason why I was wondering if maybe they were taking a stab at a gay relationship here is because Devlin seemed very, very upset that Reed was going to be going to jail for at least a year at the end for helping Kimball escape.
I don't think that's in there any more than it is in The Odd Couple, which was written at the same time about a year later.
Yeah.
I think these are just, you know, it's easy to see that today because that's all you ever hear about. But back then, this is just two men who were sharing a house simply probably for financial reasons other than any other reason. And they may have been friends. Obviously, they were friends at one time because they had built a company together. But I just don't understand that. Ken, does this make any sense to you that at the end, Reed goes to the trouble to get Kimball out and then walks away laughing just for the opportunity to say to Devlin, I fooled you? Don't you think that was not quite fair to Kimball?
Those two guys, they're kind
are
of strange. And
as far as the
way that storyline played out with those two, I didn't really pay attention. I really didn't get into them. They were just kind of side notes. I was impressed with this episode mainly with Gerard's obsession, you know, from the beginning, in the middle, and at the end. He's obsessed. Remember, it was getting dark.
Right.
The other cop says, we better close up shop. And Gerard says, no. And if you're watching The Fugitive as a fan, you know, you have to be impressed with Gerard's obsession right here. And then this is what makes the show. It really does. You have the hunter and the hunted. And these two characters, Gerard and Kimball, is what made The Fugitive, you know, so popular.
Right.
And my favorite scene, really, is Gerard standing on the cliff, and then, Reed comes out, and then Gerard finds out that Kimball escaped again. So Gerard walks over to the ledge, and then he puts his hands on his side or whatever, and then you have that music, da-da-da-da-da, and then you have the fading to the commercial. And you just see the look on Gerard's face, all right, I've got to continue the hunt. You remember that end scene?
Yeah, of course, absolutely. But that's just it. I mean, you say that you ignored the two men, but actually they're at the end of the story, and so I don't know that I can ignore them. That's how they chose to end the story. Before we run out of time, let me just go back to something Kitty touched on a few minutes ago, which is this most remarkable scene where there's a reporter reporting on this, and the whole town's in an uproar about Richard Kimball. You know, that never happens. No matter what town he goes to, only Gerard is interested in catching him. Nobody else cares. Nobody else in town cares that there's a convicted killer in town. Nobody else cares. I mean, he goes for the most wanted man in America, everybody's very blasé about it everywhere he goes. But this time, it's different. There's a reporter there, and there's a guy selling souvenirs, and Gerard, for all of his chasing of Kimball, actually takes his side. Remember that? He goes up to the guy and he says, there's a man fighting for his life in there. You shouldn't be out here selling souvenirs. So So he kicks him out. So I guess we take from that that Gerard's perfectly willing to send him to death row, but what's fair is fair, right?
Yeah, I guess, although he's got a strange way of rationalizing it all. I'm not
sure. If you're going to send this guy to death row, why really care whether or not there's a guy out there selling souvenirs? You seem to be offended by that.
Maybe those souvenirs were things like, you know, I hate Gerard T-shirts or something.
That would have been nice.
Did you notice who that broadcaster was?
Yeah, Chick Hearn.
Chick Hearn, he
right.
was the basketball announcer
right.
for the Los Angeles Lakers.
Right.
That was funny the way to get him in there.
Yeah, but that was most unusual because you would think, for all the hullabaloo that happens in this series about Kimball being cited anywhere, it's remarkable that other people in town, no matter where he goes, I mean, you don't see reporters. The only other place you see reporters gathered is in the trial by fire in season 3, where Kimball is thinking about turning himself in. All the reporters are gathered in front of the courthouse. And they're all scribbling notes because the big criminal is going to turn himself in. Other than that, there's just, you know, I mean, I know that the news wasn't covered back then the way it is now.
You know, instead of having those two clowns in the house, maybe Kimball should have got stuck in another house with a beautiful young lady. And then he has the dilemma.
Oh, no. Wait a minute.
No,
that's
too cliché.
No, what I was going to say, the good thing about this episode is that there's no nutty woman in it that falls in love and wants to run away with him. So you want to play right into that. I mean,
but there's a lot of ways they could have done that as far as where Kimball was holed up.
Well, that's why in my review I said I wanted to do the prostitute. That would have been great. I mean, she's the first person he meets early in the story. In fact, it's a fabulous scene. Played to perfection is the fact that they could have developed that. He would have to align himself with her. Maybe she's into drugs. The police are watching her. There's a lot of issues there.
She might have been charging by the minute, too, and he couldn't afford it.
He doesn't have any money, yeah. So I think that they missed an opportunity right there to do a story. If I had the basics of the story, I think I would have been really tempted to follow through on that because there's a lot of... You know, Kimball is such a goody two-shoes everywhere he goes.
Yeah.
He never does the wrong thing. He might have been
One minute, Bob.
Okay. He might have been forced in this case to align himself with this woman who, aside from prostitution, that being set aside, there might have been other issues with her. Perhaps she was into drugs, things like that. It would have been a different story. But instead, they decide to go with these two nutty men.
Yeah.
I always call them nutty old men, but they're not old at all. John Fielder was only 39 years old when he made this episode. They're really not nutty old men.
How about a last scene where you have eye-to-eye contact between Kimball and Gerard, and Kimball's on the other side of the ledge, and Gerard looks at him, and that's how you end the season?
Well,
that could have been interesting.
I think you have to end the season on some memorable visual moment.
Not these two clowns in the car riding away, and that's how you end the season.
And it's very unusual to see anybody get arrested. They're only the second... And third people in the season because Mike Decker and Search and Windy City went to jail. And they're carted off in jail. Very unusual. Gerard usually doesn't press charges.
Well, actually, Reed was the only one that was going to get arrested.
They're both being taken away in the car.
Well, yeah, they're giving Devlin a ride because he rode in the police car with him. But it was Reed that actually helped Kimball, not Devlin.
All right, well, we got to ride out of here as well, all together. So thanks to the three of you for another good job. In 2 weeks, that'll be on March the 6th. They're going to be talking the best of the worst. Is that it?
Uh-huh.
All right. And you folks be here with us when talking Fugitive with, you know, the whole gang. We'll do it one more time here on Cherovision Radio.